Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. The world of the detective is endlessly fascinating. TV shows, books, movies, half our news is fixated. But rarely do you hear what it is like from those who actually do it. NZ Detectives is a recent TV show that tells the true stories from the real detectives. And now there's a book out filling around the series. Former detective Terry Batchelor joins us now.
I guess the first thing, Terry, would be tell me about how it is to actually be involved in a project where you get to tell your own stories.
Well, it's quite amusing. If you've got a lot of stories in your repertoire, which I obviously have, then yeah, if you love telling stories, which I obviously do, then it's great. I mean, you know, it appeals to one's ego, if I could actually put it that way.
And kind of the big story that is associated with you is your involvement with the Rainbow Warrior case and tracking down the spies and kind of cracking them, really. Yeah. How was it to have a case like that? Does that define your career if you've been involved in something that big and been that successful?
It was certainly the highlight of my career, and I think that would be true of the other people working on that inquiry as well, particularly those who took a major role in it. The reason I tell you that is that we were dealing with something which was of international significance, involved national security. We weren't dealing really with a normal run-of-the-mill criminals. It had the espionage flavour about it, spies. Had a lot of ingredients that we wouldn't normally, you know, involve ourselves with. So plus the eyes of the world were looking upon us as well. So, yeah, it was quite unique.
And so wonderful to be matching wits with people who are, you know, trained in espionage and trying to get one over you and cracking them. That must be remarkably satisfying.
It was. Luck played a big part in it, I have to admit. We also probably didn't know as much as they thought that we knew, and although we weren't actually using that at the time, but now on reflection, they probably thought we had more than we really did. It demonstrated a lot of things. You know, Neighbourhood Watch, for example, came to the fore. If it hadn't been for the gentleman down at the Auckland Powerboat Club making observations in the bay, we would never have known about Alan Maffar and Dominique Prieur, or the Tronches as they once were known. So we wouldn't have known about that, and had we not known about that, then maybe we wouldn't have progressed in that investigation as far as we did.
I love to see the small details that picked up, the little things that let you know, and a mixture of that instinct, but also rational getting there by working it out, like the spill on the pants leading you to think that he was a military man. Tell us about those little details.
Yes, well, yes, I mean, I've read my share of Sherlock Holmes, Arthur Conan Doyle. But if you've read any of his stories in recent times, you suddenly makes you more aware of detail. And so when I was interviewing Maffar, I had bought him some food, you see, and the container that had the milkshake, it fell off the desk. I'm not sure whether I brushed it off or whether he did, but it fell on the ground. And some of the residue came out of the container and landed on the bottom of his corduroy trousers. Whereupon, you know, he was quite dismayed at that, and he tried to wipe it off. And I, it had happened to you and I, you know, had we not been so fastidious, perhaps, you know, we wouldn't have ignored it. But he didn't, and he wanted to go to the toilet and get some paper towels and clean it off. So I said, okay, you know, we'll do that. So we went into the men's room of the police station, and he very, very meticulously cleaned this off. And as I was looking at that, with Sherlock Holmes going around the back of my head, I'm thinking, now, who behaves like that? And it's military people about to go on parade, that behave like that. And so that was the first indication that I had that perhaps they weren't what they said they were, and they obviously were, well, he particularly had a military background. And as it turns out, I was right. But
so much of what the public, or the people outside the police force, think of the police force is made by TV shows and movies and the like. I mean, how many of these movies and TV shows get close to what it's actually like to be a detective?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure I can easily answer it just in a matter of words, but I guess it really depends on what TV show you're talking about and what country it's supposed to have, you know. I mean, like American TV shows, for example, they arrest someone and immediately handcuff them and cart them off. I don't think I've ever done that in my entire career. You know, sometimes if you're going to a burglary, the worst thing you can do is have your siren going, because obviously the burglar is going to hear it and he's going to decamp. So a lot of things you actually see on some of these programs, which are not really that realistic, but it makes for a good show.
All the scenes and interviews where you're matching wits with people, was that the job for you, matching wits in the interview? Because that's something you keep coming back to, is the interview.
Well, it was always a challenge. It was always a challenge because, yes, I guess you could liken it to playing chess. Not that I play chess, but you could liken, you know, you make a move, they make a move. And the same would apply to interviewing somebody. So you're trying to read them, which is not always easy to do. Sometimes, well, communication between people is sometimes non-verbal, non-vocal. So it's very hard to interview someone over the phone, for example, because you don't see their features, their body movements and any of these things. So, yeah, interviewing somebody face-to-face is a challenge. To take extreme measures, you know, like hitting them and doing all some of the things you see on TV, well, in some ways, that's almost admitting defeat, I think. I mean, not only is it illegal, but you know, surely you can do it some other way.
And is it then good to see a show that redresses the balance a bit, that actually has policemen talking about the work they've done, detectives, that isn't made up and fictionalised?
Yes, I think you're right. I think it does. It does. It puts back into it a little bit of balance and realism. Yeah, I think that's necessary too. And that's true of documentaries, of course.
And that well-known case, of course, is one that people always come back to. But in a 30-year career, you must have had a string of cases that really spoke to you or that were satisfying. What are some other ones that were really important for you?
Well, there's been quite a few, but there's some that do stick out in my mind hugely. Like one involved a homicide in Auckland, where we were looking for witnesses, and the witnesses that we knew would have been there, in fact, the only witnesses, would have been what we call old lags, old drunks, you know, that sort of go to church halls and just languish there and watch TV and free coffee and biscuits. So anyway, we were looking for old lags. And so we went to this, bit of a derogatory term for these people, but, you know, that's how we described them at the time. So we went to this church hall in Mount Eden Road, and we went there with the express purpose of picking up old lags, taking them back to the police station to interview them in the hope they actually saw something of this murder. And everybody got an old lag except me. You know, I was one old lag less, and I thought, gee, this is no good. I just couldn't find one, you know. Everyone else managed to find theirs. And we're just about to leave, and this old lag came up to me. He was obviously an old lag by his general appearance, but that's where it stopped right there. When he opened up his mouth, he spoke with quite an educated voice, if you put it that way. And he said, "Oh, detective," he said, I may be able to assist you. And I looked at him with his old gabardine coat on and the stains all over it, and his hair was all disarrayed. And that. So anyway, cut a long story short, I took him to the police station with very little expectation that he's going to tell me anything of any use. But I couldn't be further wrong. So I'm interviewing him, and he said to me, "I'll make a statement for you if you like." And I said, "Oh, yes." So I grabbed the old Imperial typewriter, put a piece of paper in it. And of course, when you normally interview somebody and you take a statement from them, you ask them questions, and then you sometimes have to suggest the answers to them, not putting words in their mouth exactly, but to help them along the way. That was not the case with him. He just dictated the statement to me word by word. Some words I hadn't even known about, which amazed me. And at one stage I looked at him twice thinking, you're having me on, you know. And he told me what he saw, and in fact he didn't actually see the stabbing, but he saw the events that led up to it. And then while he was doing that, he reached over and I noticed him doing the Herald crossword. He was putting in the letters as fast as he was able to do so. And then I thought, this is quite amazing. And then he pushed that aside after having completed it would take me a week to do the Herald crossword if I could even get it out. He did it within minutes. And then he got another piece of foolscap paper, still dictating a statement to me. And then he just simply sketched the suspect for the homicide. A very, very good sketch. And I looked at that almost in disbelief. So he signed the statement, gave me this. And so I went to see Detective Inspector Willie Shanks was his name. He's now passed on, unfortunately. And I was just a young detective. And I just said to Willie, I said, "Well, you're not going to believe this." And I showed him the statement and the photograph. I didn't tell him about the Herald crossword. And he was incredulous, absolutely incredulous. So anyway, the next day, we went to some of these other haunts for lags, and we walked into a place just off Williamson Avenue, walked up a corridor, walked into a bedroom, and there sitting on the bed was the spit image of this guy who you know, he sketched him. And I walked up to this guy and he said to me, "Oh," he said, "I was wondering when you're going to find me." It was the most extraordinary set of circumstances. But that one sticks out of my mind hugely because that's something you don't strike very often.
Oh, it's wonderful. And, you know, better than any fiction, isn't it? You couldn't make it up.
Truth is Yeah, stranger than fiction. Yeah.
Oh, it's fine. Well, thank you for coming in and talking with us about, and thank you for your involvement in this this excellent book.
It's my pleasure.
Former detective Terry Batchelor. The book NZ Detectives is out now through Penguin. Coming up after the break, Stinky Jim from Roundtrip Mars.